Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Tim Cyclesman Wood, editor of Cycles News and Views on cyclesman.com. Welcome back to the show, Tim.
Jim, as always, thanks for having me.
Tim, they solved the debt ceiling problem, at least for this year. Any impact from that?
Well, I see that a little differently. The market responded positively to it, obviously. But the reality of it is, if you look at, looking at it as I see it, I think what they really did is they removed any debt ceiling limitations for the coming financial crisis that I continue to think that we face. I mean, I realize this market's holding up and everybody thinks everything is fine, but as we've talked about in the last several interviews, we are facing, the market, there's an economy that's trying to roll over out of the sixth economic cycle, long-term economic cycle since 1800. And, we're dealing with the biggest bubble in history. And so we've talked about that. And so I believe that looking at this, looking at the debt, I did a little bit of analysis on this and covered it in one of the, I think I covered it in the last research letter, looking at debt and how the acceleration rate of debt has been tied to each one of these crises. You know, coming out of the 2000 low, we moved, the acceleration rate moved, let's say, to a higher level than anything we'd seen in the past up to that point. And then we roll over into the 2000, as we roll out of the 2000 or come out of the 2009 low, we see an even greater acceleration rate that eclipsed even the previous one. In other words, so that took us, let's say, to a level two, if you will. And then coming out of this 2021, we saw an even greater acceleration rate that eclipsed the previous one. That took us to the next level, like a level three. So each one is stair-stepped up in terms of acceleration of the debt. And I think that knowing where we are economically, and with this ongoing, like I said, I know it sounds like a broken record, but with this ongoing bubble mania that we are living in, that I think that it was a measure to potentially just remove the debt ceiling so that there's no obstacles to, that leads way to, the spending that's necessary to try to save this thing again. That's how I see it.
Tim, why do they have this debt ceiling thing every year? They just ignore it.
I know, really. In that regard, what difference does it even make? I mean, at 32 trillion or whatever we sit at now, I don't mean to sound like I agree with it, because I don't. It's insane money. But, does it even matter anymore? And if so, at what point? It's almost like a formality. Analysis one time. I had to do it on a spreadsheet because I couldn't relate to a trillion. I had no idea I had no reference point to a trillion. And I don't mean to put you on the spot, but do you have any idea what a trillion is? Have you thought about that, or have you ever seen anything on that?
I was going to say, have you seen my credit card bill?
Well, yours isn't as bad as the federal government's, I promise.
Exactly.
You. But a trillion, I'm trying to find a spreadsheet as we speak, but a trillion, I want to give you the exact number, but I did had to do the zeros, handle the zeros on a spreadsheet. I couldn't do it on a calculator. Here it is. So a trillion, if a second, you know, looking at a second being a dollar, in other words, a trillion seconds, I did the math, and it is 31,709 years, according to the formula in Excel, just adding it up, 31,709 years at a dollar a second, or in other words, a trillion seconds. However you want to say it, is 31,709 years. So at 32 trillion, you know, you can make the argument, what's the difference between 32 trillion and 100 trillion? I mean, I get that. I get that angle as well.
Now, the unemployment news they told us was good. Unemployment in the U.S. remained very low. Lots of job openings, lots of jobs were added. But are they telling us what kind of jobs and what kind of money those people are making?
Well, again, I think that's another shady statistic, because I'm looking at the data, and the same data, and they do tell in one of the subtopics of that headline, it said that the unemployment growth rate grew slightly. And the reality is I looked at the unemployment growth rate and the employment growth rate. So I saw articles was talking about how hot, you know, I think the Wall Street Journal reported, everybody reported it, Wall Street Journal, CNBC, all of them reported it, how hot the job market was. But in reality, the unemployment growth rate went up and the employment growth rate went down. So if these growth rates are going in the opposite direction of what they should, and you know, I'll say that again, the employment growth rate came down and the unemployment growth rate went up. And adding to that, something that I follow, looking at the unemployment growth rate, a growth rate, it makes an oscillator. It's a percentage change, right, over the period, you know, the previous however many periods. I'm looking at it over the past 12 months. So the rolling year over year, I guess you would say, growth rate of the unemployment rate has moved above zero. In other words, it's rising. It's positive. It's rising. And it's not only rising from a low level, but it's risen above the zero line. So looking at that historically, going back into the 1940s, every time that has happened, well, let me say this another way. I'm trying to choose my words. Every recession has been associated with that unemployment level rising above the zero line, but every time it has risen above the zero line, it hasn't been necessarily associated with a recession. So the vast majority have, but not every occurrence has. So that is another warning sign, I think, of, you know, the state of the economy, and papering over it with headlines saying that the job market is hot is not accurate.
The Dow keeps rising. Is it going to hit record highs?
You know, we're still dealing, Jim. It all comes down to, you know, how well they have been able to contain this thing and hold it. And like I said, they have done a wonderful job at holding it. And you know, it's a bubble. It's been a bubble. I'm not going to change my opinion on that. The economy stinks. I'm looking at the data. We just talked about the unemployment rate. We talked about, you know, how, you know, everything has been about, you know, the government spending, the increase in debt, holding interest rates, higher commodity prices. It's all been, in effect, a form of manipulation to try to keep this bubble going, keep it going, because if it turns, what we face is deflation. You know, we've talked about that. And that's what they don't want, is the deflation. So they've done a wonderful job at holding it. We're still in the process, as I see it, long-term process of the forming of the top of the biggest bubble in history. Whether we have another push to another high in the process of this setup, I don't know. I don't think so, but I can't rule it out either. But even if we do, it's not an indication that we're breaking out in a new bull market. I think it's a continuation of the setup with the biggest bubble in history, and it's being held together with you know, and it's not an excuse, but it's being held together, the house of cards, with, you know, the policies of the Fed and headlines, just like I talked about, telling everybody that, you know, they added, the job market is hot and they added all these jobs, when you're looking at the data that, shows exactly the opposite. So it's held together by, you know, I don't know what other words to call it, but that's manipulation. It's not so. And so the perception is not reality. And so we continue to levitate as we work through the topping process here.
So are you saying that this is kind of a false lead? It looks like sunny times ahead, but there are storm clouds just below the horizon that could come up and bite you?
I'm saying the storm clouds have been on the horizon, and so far the storm hasn't rolled in. But yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. You know, there is nothing going to has changed with the fact that we are dealing with the biggest bubble in history. You know, going back to a couple of interviews ago, I talked about how this long-term sixth economic cycle bottomed in 2002, and it has been, this entire cycle has been fueled by monetary policy since 2002. And if you just stop, sit back and think, instead of getting, you know, caught in the look at the forest instead of the trees, as they say. But, you know, everybody's looking at the market today and says, well, it's up, everything's fine. And yes, it is at the moment. The big picture, what I'm warning about and seeing, is that this entire sixth economic cycle, they've been fighting, trying to hold it up, it's been going on for 20 years now. And they have, like I said, they've done a magnificent job, but it's not as it appears. This entire cycle is built on a house of cards, monetary policy. It tried to crack in 2007. It tried to crack there was a minor crack in 2018, but it really tried to crack in 2020. And now here we are, this trying to set up once again, and each time it's been held together, as I was saying, with the stimulus. I mean, that's what the debt, that's what I was talking about with the federal debt when we started this interview. Each one of these crises has been met with an acceleration in the increase of spending in the form of stimulus. So what they are fighting is that deflationary force of the cycle trying to turn down. And it's a battle between them being able to hold it and continue to do what they're doing, and the thing just getting out of control and collapsing. And so far, they've been able to hold it.
Tim, I don't know if you can comment on this. Oil prices haven't gone up yet. Gasoline prices are starting to skyrocket, and they're telling us it's going to be another summer of high gasoline prices. Why the big disconnect between the oil price and the price that the consumer pays for it eventually?
Well, typically the two go hand in hand. Why that is happening, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, because, you know, typically they are closely correlated. But crude oil prices, you are correct, they haven't broken down, but they have been soft. You know, we've drifted lower. We've stayed, you know, I think last time I looked, I don't remember if I saw a quote yesterday, and I haven't looked this morning as I was busy doing some other stuff, but, you know, we've been in the high 60s. So we've drifted lower with crude oil. And in my work, you know, crude oil has been, you know, the advances have been expected to be countertrend, and they have been. And so the tendency is here, I think, to see lower crude oil prices, or that's the direction it's been wanting to try to go. So to see gasoline prices holding up against that is a little bit of an anomaly.
We'll have more with Tim Wood right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Tim Cyclesman Wood. Tim, you've dug up some charts that show the relation between crude prices and gasoline prices. What do the charts tell you?
Yeah, well, we were at break. I pulled up a couple of charts and did just a simple overlay. And like I said, the correlation is high, and typically they go hand in hand. So if you're hearing news, and I have not heard that, so I'm not disputing what you're saying. I'm just saying I haven't heard it here. Maybe it's a Canadian thing. I don't know. But the two are highly correlated. And so maybe what you're seeing is, well, in some form, I'd say it's misinformation, because maybe it's an effort to try to hold crude oil prices higher, or drive crude oil prices higher by setting the expectation for higher gasoline prices. But no, they are highly correlated. And like I said, crude oil has been soft and been trying to break down out of some higher degree cycle tops. So, if that trend doesn't change, if we continue to see that weakness, then gasoline prices should follow.
Now, on the interest rate hike front, the Fed didn't hike rates this week. However, the Bank of Canada did hike rates the other week. The Central European Bank has hiked rates. What's the situation there? Why the divergence? And is the Fed going to continue to hike rates later on this year?
The Fed shouldn't continue to based on how do I say this, historical norms. I have a model, a couple of different Fed models, and the first thing we saw that is an anomaly, and we've seen a number of anomalies through this bubble period, but this rate hiking cycle should have never even begun, and I think it was another lack of better words, engineered. In other words, it was not an organic rate hiking cycle. It began with putting a floor under interest rates with the reverse repo operations and talking rates up and setting the expectation of higher rates. And that was all part of, I know this is contrary to what people may think, but covered it in great detail in the research letters, that it's all part of trying to hold this thing together with higher rates in the face of or under the cover of fighting inflation. So anyway, that said, the rate hiking cycle, and I've pretty well proven it, should have never begun, based on one model. The other model, though, looks at it a different way. It says, okay, well, I don't care if it should have begun or not. When should it be over? And looking at that model, I published this in the last couple of research letters, and it triggered back in March. And looking at two different statistics there, since 1981, every time it triggered, it marked the top of the rate hiking cycle. If you look at prior to 81, there was one occurrence in 80 as we moved into that final interest rate peak in 80, 81. There was one occurrence where it triggered and there was one rate hike. And then back in the 70s, there was one occurrence where it triggered and there was one rate hike followed. So at most, there were two exceptions where it triggered and there were single rate hikes. So when this thing triggered in March, it said, well, since you look at it since 1981, it says they shouldn't raise. If you look at it since going back to the inception of the data back in the 60s, it says, well, they might raise once. We got that one raise with the last raise. And so based on this model, we got that raise. They shouldn't raise again. If we see another hike down the road, it would be unprecedented based on this model. So it made perfect sense to me that we did not see a hike this time, looking at that model.
The Bank of China has lowered their one-year loan rate by 1%. Is this the first crack we're seeing internationally on higher interest rates?
It should be. It should be. We should have had, looking at this interest rate cycle from a different perspective, we should have had some long-term cycle lows in the long bond, which would reverse rates back in late last year, and that's low is still in the process of a turning. It's like turning a battleship, as they say. And so I think what we're seeing is that long term cycle taking hold and slowly turning rates. So yes, I think this should be the beginning of a turn with rates.
Tim, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
No, I mean, we continue to tread water. And you know, I say this, people listen the least when they should listen the most. It's after the crisis that you know, it gets people's attention. And people have no idea the magnitude of what we face here. Like I said, that they have done an excuse, but they have done a magnificent job at holding this thing. And I don't blame them in their efforts, because I think we face one hell of a deflationary spiral once it sets up and the bubble pops. And like I said, to mention, you got two things that working here. I mean, one, we have the biggest bubble in history, but two, we're trying to roll over out of this sixth long-term economic cycle to boot. And so we kind of have, you know, a double whammy here. And like I said, they've done a magnificent job at holding this at bay, which I don't guess I can blame them for that. But in the process, it's made matters worse. I mean, it's just kind of the windfall of it. And people have no idea how big this bubble really is. And that's the danger that we face. And I think that when this market, we'll get close to a setup, it'll try, and then it just kind of morphs away, and you know, nothing ever really bites. But at one of these junctures, the technical setup is going to bite, and I think the charts are going to look like the banking stocks. Going to wake up one morning, it bit, and people are going to say, where did that come from? Say, well, we had the structure and that one bit. So I say all that to say this: it's far more dangerous than it appears, than it may feel. And I'm covering it 3 days a week in the updates and short-term updates and the research letters. So if anyone's interested in trying to follow and be aware and understand the things I'm talking about with this long-term economic cycle and the relationship with interest rates and, the federal debt and how it all works together, then, it's available in the research letters.
Tim, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you.
My guest has been Tim Cyclesman Wood, editor of Cycles News and Views on cyclesman.com. If you have any questions for Tim or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.